Hi friends, welcome to The Rice Table, the podcast that feeds more than just your appetite. My name is Jeff Keysberry. Besides eating, I like to talk about food and other things with passionate people. We are podcasting from a chilly and rainy LA. Oh yeah. If you like this podcast, please follow me and leave a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. When I'm craving Dutch food, I get my groceries at Holland International Market in Bellflower. I go there to stock up on all kinds of popular imported Dutch goods like cookies, chocolate sprinkles, chocolate bars, licorice, cake mixes and snacks like kroketten, pitterballen and much more. I also get my Indonesian ingredients there like spices, sambal, krupuk, ketchup, you name it. So go to the Holland International Market on 9835 Belmont Street in Bellflower. Oh, and Holland International Market also delivers to your home anywhere in the U.S. Go check out their online store at DutchMarketInUSA.com. Remember, the best place to go for imported groceries from the Netherlands and Indonesia is Holland International Market in Bellflower. This episode is going to be me, myself, and I. I have an intriguing story I want to tell you about. But first, let me share with you how I got into podcasting. Well, one day, while I was in the kitchen preparing some delicious Indonesian dishes and listening to a podcast, I thought, why not dabble in the wonderful world of podcasting myself? Have some fun with it and see if there is an interest. The cool thing about podcasts is that you can listen to it anywhere, anytime, whether it be while cooking or driving to the grocery store, for instance. Fast forward to today, after producing more than 30 episodes of The Rice Table, and nearly 2 years later, the podcast has gained a significant number of dedicated listeners and has become increasingly popular among those interested in food and culture. I'm very thankful for that. As I'm listening to several other shows, I found myself wondering, what are the most popular genres? Curious, I turned to the experts in the podcast universe and they revealed the following top five. On one, true crime, real-life criminal cases and investigations. On two, news and current affairs. On three, comedy. On four, sports. And on five, self-improvement and personal development with actionable tips and inspiring stories. I also watched the first two seasons of a popular TV show called Only Murders in the Building. You may have heard about it. It's an American mystery comedy drama television series starring Steve Martin, Martin Short, and Selena Gomez. Three individuals who share a common interest in true crime podcasts have come together to create their own podcast as they delve into the investigation of murders that have occurred in their building located on the Upper West Side of New York. The title of the show refers to the name of the podcast started by Arconia, the New York building of the title's residence. So this got me thinking, are there any true crime stories revolving around a famous chef that stands out? In my search, I came across several high-profile cases in the food industry that have involved criminal activity or scandal. I was hoping to find something specifically related to the preparation or consumption of food, expecting headings like celebrated chef found guilty of putting arsenic in the sambal. Most cases I found were about individuals who were prominent in the food industry and were accused of sexual misconduct, harassment, and criminal behavior in and outside the kitchen or restaurant setting. You can Google this famous chef and restaurateur who was accused of lewd comments, groping, and unwanted touching. I say, no playing with forbidden fruit, chef. True or false, the chef was reportedly overheard saying to one of his victims, if you can't handle the heat, get out of the kitchen. No, no, chef. This statement is inappropriate when it comes to unwanted physical contact. In my opinion, if you find yourself in a situation where you cannot control the kitchen's temperature, it is best to leave. If you can, consider wearing a helmet next time to protect yourself in case someone decides to strike you with a skillet, and stay close to the kitchen knives. So, I continued my search for more juicy samples of real-life crimes and high-profile murder cases in the restaurant business. And yes, I found some. Listen to this. In 2010, a chef named David Veen was convicted of killing his wife and disposing of her body in his restaurant's grease trap. Then there is the Cannibal Chef case. In 2012, a chef named Luca Magnotta was accused of murdering and dismembering a man and then mailing body parts to different locations in Canada. Oh boy. Magnotta had worked as a cook in the past and became known as the Cannibal Chef during his trial. How about the Pizza Bomber case? In 2003, a pizza delivery man named Brian Wells robbed a bank in Pennsylvania with a bomb strapped to his neck. He claimed that he had been forced to commit the robbery by a group of people who had taken him hostage. The investigation into the case eventually led to the discovery of a murder plot involving the owner of a nearby restaurant. Then there is the Taco Bell strangler case. In 2007, a man named Gary Lee Sampson was sentenced to death for killing three people in a crime spree that included the murder of a man worked at a Taco Bell restaurant in Massachusetts. Sampson had previously worked in the restaurant industry as a dishwasher and cook. I told you, don't touch the salsa! These cases illustrate that while the restaurant business can be a rewarding and exciting career path, it can also be a setting for violent crimes. So hide the knives and start wearing a helmet. You never know. Before the arrival of television, people had a variety of entertainment options. Radio was a popular source of entertainment, with families gathering around to listen to their favorite shows. The radio became a central feature in many homes, and families would tune in to listen to music, news broadcasts, and dramas. As an ex-radio show host said, radio is the theater of the mind. One of the most popular forms of entertainment on the radio was the serial drama. These were fictional stories that were told over several episodes, with each episode ending on a cliffhanger to keep listeners hooked. Soap operas were also popular on the radio, with their dramatic storylines and emphasis on romance and relationships. So here's my intriguing murder mystery short story I want to tell you about. It's titled Murder on the Menu, a radio play, or rather podcast play, by Jeff K. Detective Amelia Jones had seen her fair share of murder scenes, but this one left her feeling particularly unsettled. She stood in the alley behind an Indonesian restaurant, staring down at the lifeless body of a kitchen staff member named Tony, as it sat on the name tag of his uniform, his eyes staring up at nothing. His throat had been slit from ear to ear, and blood had pooled around him. Jones crouched down beside the body, taking a closer look. Tony had been a sous chef at the restaurant, and the blood still dripped from his neck. It was a gruesome sight, and Jones felt a chill run down her spine. It was clear that someone had intended to end the victim's life, and they had done so with a cold and calculated brutality. She knew she had her work cut out for her. As the detective continued her investigation, her eyes were drawn to a small bowl next to the victim's lifeless body. It was filled with peanut sauce, a stark contrast to the violent scene that surrounded it. The detective's mind raced with questions. Was this simply a coincidence, or was there a deeper connection between the bowl of peanut sauce and the victim's untimely demise? She carefully examined the bowl, looking for any clues that might shed light on the mystery. But as she looked closer, she realized that there was something odd about the sauce. It was darker in color than usual, and had a strange, almost bitter smell. Could this have anything to do with the victim's death? One thing was certain, this was no ordinary murder, and the peanut sauce was just one piece of a much larger puzzle. Death by peanut allergy was most unlikely. The first thing Jones did was to interview the restaurant's owner, a young Indonesian man named Malik. He appeared nervous and shaken by the murder. He told Jones that Tony had been a valued employee who had worked at the restaurant for years. He was well-liked by the staff, and Malik couldn't imagine who would want to harm him. Jones took note of Malik's behavior, observing his fidgeting and the sweat on his brow. She wondered if he knew more than he was letting on, but for now, she decided to keep him as a person of interest. Next, Jones interviewed the kitchen staff. Most of them appeared genuinely shocked and saddened by Tony's death, but one man, a chef named Peter, seemed particularly distraught. Jones made a mental note to investigate him further. As she continued her investigation, Jones discovered that Tony had caught Peter and his sous chef named Julia in an intimate embrace in the pantry. Tony had been known to be close to Julia, and the discovery of the affair likely led to a confrontation. leading to his untimely death? Further investigation revealed that Peter and Julia had been involved in a romantic relationship for months, which they had kept hidden from the rest of the staff. The motive for the murder was jealousy and fear of exposure. Jones realized that she needed to find Peter and Julia to question them further. She was about to leave the restaurant when she noticed a couple sitting in the corner, engrossed in their food. It was a man named Tom and his date, who were feasting on a rice tafel, an array of dishes with steamed rice as the centerpiece. Tom's date appeared to be enjoying the food, and she was particularly delighted with the flavors and spices she had never tasted before, sampling from a variety of dishes, which included spicy curry, sweet and sour sambals, and savory stews. Jones watched them for a moment, considering whether to approach them or not. She decided against it for now, as she didn't want to disrupt their exotic journey of culinary discovery just yet. But she made a note to come back later and ask them some questions. Jones returned to the kitchen, ready to continue her investigation. She started by questioning the kitchen staff again, focusing her attention on Peter and Julia. It didn't take long for her to realize that they were hiding something. Jones returned to the kitchen, ready to continue her investigation. She started by questioning the kitchen staff again, focusing her attention on Peter and Julia. It didn't take long for her to realize that they were hiding something. She confronted them with the evidence of their affair, and they both broke down in tears. They confessed to their relationship and told Jones that Tony had caught them in the pantry, kissing and touching, and then some. One could argue that's invading someone's privacy by intruding on them while they are in a private space, but is the pantry really a private space? They admitted to arguing with him and pushing him, but they both denied killing him. Jones could see the fear in their eyes, and she knew that they were hiding something. She decided to take them in for further questioning. Meanwhile, in the restaurant, Tom and his date were enjoying the rice tafel immensely, trying each dish and marveling at the unique flavors. She took one bite of a spicy dish and appeared to experience a sudden shock. It looked like her taste buds were overwhelmed by the intensity of the spice. This caused her eyes to widen, her mouth to open, and her face to contort in discomfort. Her face began to flush with heat, and she started sweating profusely. She was signaling to Tom that she was extremely uncomfortable and started to cough, and her eyes started to tear. Tom quickly grabbed his glass of water and offered it to her, but as she drank it, he realized his mistake. She spit most of it out again. He had accidentally given her a glass of rice wine instead of water. So he quickly gave her the other glass, and things went back to normal. Feeling embarrassed, Tom apologized and tried to make up for it by telling Lisa more about the rice tafel. However, he struggled to pronounce the names of the dishes correctly, causing the waiter to correct him each time he overheard. As the meal went on, Tom became increasingly flustered and anxious, dropping his fork and spilling food on his shirt. Talking about a fork, eating Indonesian food the American way with just a fork as a utensil in your right hand while your left hand is resting on your lap, what's wrong with that picture? It is not necessarily wrong to eat Indonesian food with just a fork, but it may not be the most traditional or authentic way of enjoying the cuisine. According to Indonesian-style dining etiquette, the spoon is used to put food in the mouth and hold rice with curry and soupy dishes, while the fork is used to scoop and arrange rice and food onto the spoon so it doesn't fall off on its way to the mouth. You are not supposed to put the fork into your mouth. In Indonesian culture, eating with one's hand is quite common and even preferred for some dishes, as it is believed to enhance the sensory experience and connect to the eater with the food. This method of eating is known as makan dengan tangan. Where were we? Oh yes. Meanwhile, Lisa, his date, yes she's got a name, couldn't help but giggle at Tom's antics. She found his attempts to impress her with his knowledge of Indonesian cuisine endearing. Even if he didn't always get it right, by the end of the meal, Tom was a mess, covered in food and feeling like a fool. But suddenly, Tom's date began coughing uncontrollably again. Her face turned red, her eyes watery, and with every cough her eyes appeared to be bulging out further. It looked like they were about to pop out of their sockets due to the pressure and strain building up. He asked if she was choking, but she couldn't respond and stopped coughing. Her airway seemed to be completely blocked, so Tom jumped up from his chair and was getting ready to perform the Heimlich maneuver, a technique designed to dislodge the object from the person's throat. So Tom got behind his date and wrapped his arms around her waist, and he made a fist with one hand and placed it just above the person's navel. He then grasped his fist with the other hand and pulled inward and upward with a quick and forceful motion. He kept repeating a couple of times, which caused the object to be dislodged and exit her mouth and dropped on the floor. Tom looked at the small ball that almost killed his date. His date was feeling shaken and appeared to be a bit dizzy. Her hair looked frizzled and she was missing a shoe. The waiter, who saw the whole ordeal, told her to sit down and take a few breaths. "Try to calm down," he told her. She wanted her shoe and a glass of water, but the waiter told her to seek medical attention first to ensure there are no underlying injuries or complications. But he did return her missing shoe. That's nice. Back to Tom. He was still examining the ball, which just came out of his date's mouth, and it turned out to be a combination of meat, rice, and peanut sauce. What the? Did Lisa have a peanut allergy? Tom excused himself to go to the restroom, so he said. Did he really? Jones returned to the station with Peter and Julia in custody, and she reviewed the evidence, trying to piece together what had happened in the pantry that night. She knew that Peter and Julia had something to do with Tony's death, but she needed more information to make a case against them. She decided to go back to the restaurant and talk to Tom and his date. What's her name? She was curious about the Reisstaffel they had enjoyed, and she wondered if they had noticed anything strange. When she arrived, she found the restaurant empty. Except for Malik. He was sitting at the bar, sipping a cup of coffee. Jones approached him and he looked up, surprised to see her. "Detective Jones," he said, standing up. "What brings you back here?" "I wanted to talk to the couple who were here earlier this evening," she said. "They had the Reisstaffel." Malik nodded. "Ah, yes, Tom and Lisa. They left shortly after you did. Do you have their contact information?" Jones asked. Malik hesitated for a moment, then handed over a business card. "They didn't leave their information, but they did mention that they were staying at a hotel nearby. I wrote the name down on the card," he said. Jones thanked him and left the restaurant feeling frustrated. She knew that time was running out to solve the case, so she decided to visit the hotel and see if she could find Tom and Lisa. When she arrived at the hotel, she found Tom and Lisa in their room. They were surprised to see her, but they welcomed her in. "We had a feeling you might come back," Tom said, smiling. Jones took a seat on the couch, feeling relieved to have found them. She explained the situation to them, telling them about the murder and her investigation. Tom and Lisa listened intently, nodding as she spoke. When she finished, Tom spoke up. "I remember seeing Peter and Julia arguing in the kitchen," he said. Jones leaned forward. "Can you tell me more about that? What did they say?" Tom thought for a moment, then spoke. "It was hard to hear everything, but I remember Julia saying something about being afraid of getting caught." Jones felt a jolt of excitement. She knew that this was the break she had been looking for. She thanked Tom and Lisa and left the hotel feeling energized. She returned to the station and called in Peter and Julia for questioning. She confronted them with Tom's testimony, and they both broke down, confessing to the murder. They had been afraid that Tony would expose their affair, so they had planned to kill him and make it look like a robbery. They wanted to kill him, but found him on the ground in the alley, unresponsive. To be sure he was dead, they had used a kitchen knife to slit his throat and had disposed of the knife in the dumpster behind the restaurant. Jones arrested Peter and Julia and charged them with murder. She felt a sense of satisfaction as she watched them being led away in handcuffs. She knew that justice had been served. As for Tom and Lisa, they had enjoyed the Reisstaffel immensely, and best of all, her hero, Tom, had saved her life. Overall, the two scenes in the restaurant and the murder in the alley were not directly connected, but they were linked by the common thread of the Indonesian restaurant. Jones had found the break she needed in Tom and Lisa's testimony, which had led to the capture of the murderers. The case had been a difficult one, but Jones felt a sense of satisfaction knowing that justice had been served. She had worked tirelessly, following every lead and analyzing every piece of evidence to solve the case. However, as she sat at her desk, filling out paperwork, she couldn't help but wonder if there was more to the story. She had a nagging feeling that something was still missing. She decided to revisit the crime scene in the alley behind the restaurant, hoping to find some clue that would explain why Peter and Julia had been so desperate to keep their affair a secret. As she walked through the alley, she noticed a small door that led to the basement of the restaurant. It was slightly ajar, and she could see a faint light coming from inside. She cautiously approached the door and pushed it open, her heart pounding in her chest. She descended the stairs, her hand on her gun, ready for anything. As she reached the bottom of the stairs, she saw a sight that made her stop in her tracks. There, in the basement, were boxes and boxes of marijuana plants. Yes, plants! Jones couldn't believe her eyes. She had stumbled upon a major drug operation, and she knew that this had to be why Peter and Julia had been so desperate to keep their affair a secret. They were both involved in the drug trade, and they knew that if their affair was exposed, it would lead to their downfall. Jones quickly called for backup, and the basement was raided. The drug operation was shut down, and several people were arrested. Jones couldn't believe how lucky she had been. If she hadn't revisited the crime scene, she never would have found the basement and uncovered the drug operation. The case was now even more complicated than before, but Jones was up for the challenge. She knew that she had to follow this new lead and bring everyone involved to justice. In the end, Jones was able to solve the case, not only catching the murderers, but also uncovering a major drug operation. She had gone above and beyond in her investigation, following every lead and never giving up. She received high praise from her colleagues and the community, and she felt a sense of pride knowing that she had made a difference. The murder mystery that started with a kitchen staff member found dead in the alley behind the restaurant had turned into a complex case involving a drug operation, an affair, and a fierce determination to uncover the truth. Back at the hotel, Tom and Lisa's room window was open. They were laying on the bed, looking relaxed and content, while smoking a joint. Where did they get it? The end. So, this was my short crime story. Makes you wonder, did Tom really go to the restroom, or did he have anything to do with the death of the man in the alley? Revenge for attempted murder by peanut sauce? Who knows? Yes, gado gado is best served cold. While we are on the subject, let me share a recipe for peanut sauce with you. Let's go to the kitchen. Ingredients: 1 cup roasted unsalted peanuts, 2 cloves garlic minced, 2 red chilies chopped, remove seeds for less heat, 1 tablespoon of tamarind paste, 2 tablespoons of palm sugar or brown sugar, 1 teaspoon salt, 1/2 cup of hot water, and 2 tablespoons of vegetable oil. Now get ready. In a food processor or blender, grind the peanuts until they are finely chopped. Heat the vegetable oil in a small saucepan over medium heat. Add the minced garlic and chopped chilies to the saucepan and sauté for about 1 or 2 minutes until fragrant. Add the ground peanuts, tamarind paste, palm sugar, and salt to the saucepan and stir to combine. Pour in the hot water and stir the mixture until it becomes a smooth sauce. Cook the sauce over low heat for about 5 minutes, stirring occasionally until it thickens slightly. Remove the saucepan from the heat and let the peanut sauce cool to room temperature. Yummy, yummy! To serve, pour the peanut sauce over a plate of mixed vegetables and tofu, such as blanched bean sprouts, boiled potatoes, boiled eggs, steamed long beans, and fried tofu. Enjoy your delicious Indonesian. Oh, I always crumble a bit of kerupuk udang or garlic chips over the gado gado with peanut sauce and some fried shallots. Delicious. Enjoy! And this concludes another episode of the Rice Table Podcast. If you liked it, come back for more. Please write a review and give a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. Let me know your comments and share on Instagram at Jeff Keysberry. Thank you for listening. Production by yours truly and opening and closing music by David Cutter. Cheers!